And the subject tonight for Women's Voices is Follow the Honey, 7 Ways Pesticide Companies Are Spinning the Bee Crisis to Protect Profits. I'm Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. I am here with my guest, Stacy Malcolm of Friends of the Earth, talking about the bees and their alarming die-off. Bees and other pollinators, essential for 2/3 of the food crops humans eat every day, are in great peril, and populations are dwindling worldwide. Pests, diseases, loss of forage and habitat, and changing climate have all been identified as possible contributing factors to global bee losses. However, a growing body of science has implicated the world's most widely used pesticides, neonicotinoids, neonics, made by giant chemical companies, the usual culprits, Bayer and Syngenta and Monsanto, as a key factor in recent global bee die-offs. Along, I add, with breast cancers and other kinds of cancers, it's astounding what deadly products these companies have spread throughout our precious environment. Okay, let's take a little break and listen to Listen by the Goddess Alchemy Project.
Listen. Listen. Listen to the rhythms. Listen for the sounds that resound between the spaces where the beat meets the streets and the heart finds the drumming. The symphony is one tapestry and the sound becomes one rhythm, connecting every moment to this now. Listen to the cries of broken-hearted mothers and frozen-hearted fathers searching for a meeting place. Listen for the lost incantations composed beneath the surface and scripted to return. Listen to the sounds of new souls birthing and babies becoming of them. Listen for the missing ingredients. Finish the recipes just by listening to the source of your soul that is screaming to you to slow down and remember. You are divine. A blueprint of perfect information, a reflection of culminated magic on the precipice of extinction. Resurrect your breath. Listen to the heaving of your own chest breathing, leaving emotion alive in the air to resonate. Listen to the orchestration of every interconnected gesture, creating the canvas upon which we dream ourselves into being. Listen for the lyrics between the lines of the words you think you're hearing and let go. Allow yourselves to feel the flow pulsing within your veins, connecting you with every being on this planet. Your arteries are mirrored reflections of the watersheds of this earth. The ratio of water in your body is an exact replication of the ratio of water to land on this planet. Our tears are the waters of the ocean. Our wombs are filled with this same water. This water forms crystals when spoken to softly. How are you speaking? Communication, celebration, education, healing. Listen to all of these seemingly separate sounds and witness this symphony forms one tapestry. You are a weaver of this fabric that needs the harmony of we to be. You are profoundly blessed. Listen to the silent prophecies they don't want us to hear. If we are the ones we've been waiting for, why wait? We are the ones we've been waiting for. Wait no more. Listen. Listen.
For over a decade, Stacy Malcolm has led campaigns to move the market to safer products. She is the author of the award-winning book, Not a Pretty Face: The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry, from New Society 2007, and co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. Stacy has been named one of 5 visionaries leading the charge to better health by Experience Life magazine. Stacey has appeared on, among other things, other shows, Good Morning America, CBS Morning Show, Democracy Now!, and Fran Drescher's Talk Show. Her articles have appeared in many major newspapers, and she currently writes for the Huffington Post. She has appeared in documentary films, including The Human Experiment, Unacceptable Levels, and Pink Skies. In 2012, Stacey was media director for the historic California Right to Know ballot initiative to label genetically engineered foods, and she produces the acclaimed online conference GMOs, What You Need to Know. From 2001 to 2008, Stacey was communications director for Healthcare Without Harm, which got mercury out of hospitals and closed down medical waste incinerators around the world. Hooray! Prior to her work as an environmental health activist, Stacey worked as a journalist for 8 years in Colorado, and she published an investigative newspaper, the Summit Free Press. On the eve of Bayer's annual stockholders meeting in Germany, author Michelle Simon and the environmental group Friends of the Earth released a new report documenting the tactics used by Bayer and other pesticide companies to delay regulatory action on neonicotinoids, pesticides, a key contributor to bee declines. The European Union banned the three most widely used neonicotinoids based on strong science indicating that neonics can kill bees outright and make them more vulnerable to pests, pathogens, and other stressors. However, these pesticides are still widely used in the U.S. despite massive bee losses that threaten vital food crops from almonds in California to apples in Washington. So, with that, I bring up my guest, Stacey Malcolm of Friends of the Earth. Welcome, Stacey, to Women's Voices. I'm so glad you could take time from your busy schedule to be with us.
Thank you so much, Janie. I'm very happy to be here.
Lovely. My first question is, what part did your mother play in your becoming the caring and inspired woman that you are today?
Oh, I love this question. Thank you for this. And, you know, I have a wonderful mom, and my mom was a teenager when she had me. She was 18 years old. And I think that the biggest factor from my mom was just her fierce love and acceptance, always telling me I was beautiful, I was smart, that she believed in me. And so I think to me that is what has shaped my life, that feeling that I was loved and that feeling of acceptance in myself. And so I just think that's one of the most powerful things that we can do as parents, as moms to each other. And, you know, I think Bill Clinton said once that his philosophy was that every child should have one person that thinks the sun rises or sets around them. And for me, I had a few of those. And even though it wasn't an ideal situation, you know, even back then it was difficult, controversial to be so young and having a child. So I would say it was choice and not circumstance and the situation of my family that led to that kind of fierce love and acceptance once I was born. So thank you to my mom and all the women in my family who rallied to that.
That's very beautiful, touching. Thank you.
Thank you for asking me that. I love it. It's a wonderful place to start this conversation.
You know, it really is. My next question follows that one is, how did you get from there to here? What moved you in your life to pursue the course of protecting vulnerable people and environments from the onslaughts of poison that face us creatures on Earth at every turn? Go ahead.
Yes, that was well put, and that is truly my mission and passion in life. And it really came from a place of, from a long road of learning. I was a reporter for many years, as you mentioned, and so I was covering environmental issues and asking a lot of questions. At one point, when I lived in Colorado, there was a huge controversy in my community over the idea of spraying chemicals all around bike paths and other public places to control the weeds. And there were, you know, lots of weed problems in Colorado, I lived in a beautiful place in the high country in Breckenridge, Colorado, where there was just these glorious mountain paths, bike paths, and parks. And so the county was proposing to spray chemicals on the in these spaces in order to control the weeds. And that was hugely controversial in the community. People were very upset. And they actually called a meeting that 200 people showed up to, which in this small community was just astounding. I was a reporter at the time covering this, and I went to this meeting. And, you know, it started out with this very well-produced video, about 10 minutes, showing all of the weeds and the problems that they were wreaking on the environment, and sort of ended with this, you know, happy, seemingly easy solution. We just spray chemicals on the weeds, and everything will be fine. And, of course, when the credits started to roll on this video, we saw that it was produced by Dow Chemical and DuPont, and the chemical industries were arming these government officials with the information, PR information essentially, to, you know, justify spraying chemicals all over the place, in places where kids and pets were, you know, running and playing. So that didn't go over well with the crowd, starting the meeting off with this video, and it actually got really emotional. People were yelling. At one point, people were crying. I was a reporter at the time just covering it, thinking, well, this is a great story. You know, and that began really my learning and investigation into what's going on with chemicals. And so I spent a lot of time. I was working for a monthly newspaper at the time, so I had some time to look into this. And I talked with scientists and government officials. I went out with the weed guys, you know, these fellows that they had hired for weed control, and they taught me all about the weeds, which, you know, are a problem. But what was very clear to me was that while they could tell me everything about weeds, they couldn't tell me anything about the chemicals that they were proposing to spray all over the place. There just wasn't good information about health effects, environmental impacts, or in very little in the way of government controls. And so it really was clear to me that there's so much we don't know about chemicals that we're getting directly exposed to, and we really need to take a closer look at what's going on. And really since then, my life has been an investigation into that. While I no longer work as a reporter, I work with many scientists and advocates who are really leading the research in the field of environmental health. And figuring out how can we talk to the public about what we know about the very strong links between rising rates of disease in this country and the huge proliferation of chemicals that we've seen in all aspects of our lives, not only agriculture and environmentally, but products in our homes and in many ways that we're getting exposed to chemicals on a daily basis.
Well, it's clear we can't be educated enough. It just surrounds us in every way.
That's right. That's right. And I think the best we can do is learn what we can and then, you know, make informed and common sense choices.
How did you get into Friends of the Earth?
I'm actually recently with Friends of the Earth, one of my favorite environmental organizations, and I work with them part-time. When I was working with the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, we were really looking into, and we were really the first group that decided to do a deep investigation into what's in the chemicals that we're putting on our bodies every day. And we worked in coalition with Friends of the Earth at that time, as well as other environmental groups. What was really exciting about that work was that there was such a desire for knowledge among women, just to know more. You know, people wanting to know what is in these products that we're putting on our bodies, what are the effects, and women wanting to come together and share information. And so I really saw then the beginnings of what I think is a really vibrant, powerful, so important women's movement that's rising up to demand information about chemicals, about the links to our health, about what's going on with a lot of the rising diseases that we're seeing, as you mentioned, breast cancer and allergies in kids and many concerning health trends. So I think there's just a real rising consciousness among women who are seeing these health effects in kids and in each other, a real demand for information, desire to come together to learn about it, to talk about it, to share information. And so that, for me, you know, seeing that energy, that was really what drew me into this work as my path in life. And we were doing it through this investigation into the cosmetics industry and the beauty industry, which I wrote a book about in 2007. And I worked with a wonderful woman at that time, the coordinator of the campaign, Lisa Archer. She later left and actually went to the Friends in the Earth food program. So we've reconnected to do some of the same work in the food movement that we were doing in the cosmetics campaign. So that was one link. But what my path took me in 2012, I decided to join the California Ballot Initiative to label GMOs. That was really my first step into the food movement, and it was really because of that link to the women's movement that I saw. There was such a vibrant, passionate group of volunteers who were out on the streets getting petitions signed to get Proposition 37 on the ballot to label GMOs. And we had almost 1 million signatures. It was just a huge grassroots effort. And I really wanted to learn about that and to connect with these women and to figure out how to bridge with the community I was working with of women who were interested in cosmetics. So I sort of came at it from there. And, of course, it's a lot of the same issues. It's a lot of the same challenges. It's a fight against the chemical industry that has too much power and too much influence in our lives and too much impact on our health that's hidden and unseen. It's happening with products in our homes, but it's also happening with food on our tables. And so that's really what the GMO labeling fight was about for me, a fight for more information, for transparency, for understanding what's happening with our food and what are these chemical companies up to.
And it almost passed.
It almost passed. It came so close. And it really was a victory in many ways, even though it lost, because it really spawned a nationwide push for labeling that I believe is unstoppable. It's still going on. Vermont, Connecticut, Maine have passed labeling laws, and other states are now going forward with initiatives, Oregon and Colorado this year. We also tried a legislative attempt this year in California, which also almost passed. We needed 2 more votes to get it through the Senate. So we're close, and we're not giving up. I mean, the upshot of this is the environmental groups have really come together with increased commitment to get this done, that we will win labeling, that transparency is key because we have a right to know what's in our food.
Well, of course. It seems that the companies, the industries, put so much money into elections that they just overcome what people are wanting.
So far, it's true. We have a really big problem in this country with just too much control of corporations over our government, and unfortunately also over these elections, because too many people are making choices based on what they see in ads, and they don't even know it. That's disturbing.
It is. It's hard to understand. It seems like everybody's on the same page, and then this influx of money comes in, and people get swayed out of that. And I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, it is challenging to understand. I've been challenged by that, too. We know that most people, the vast majority, believe GMOs should be labeled and agree that we have a right to know what's in our food. But, you know, their game was just to confuse people. Maybe we have a right to know, but this initiative is written wrong, or, these other excuses that caused a lot of people to think, well, I want labeling, but this isn't the right way. But, of course, that was the industry's game, to convince people just that, and it worked just enough. This is a challenge that we have to deal with, and we're seeing it with the neonicotinoids. And the bee situation, just that the companies are all out spending a lot of money, hiring PR firms and lobbyists to just keep protect the profits from these pesticides at the expense of bees and all of us. But this is a really it's a critical situation, because bees are such a linchpin to our whole food system. They're an indicator of health to our whole food system. And as you said, they're dying in alarming numbers. That's been well documented. It's known. And countries are starting to take action on it. Europe has banned these pesticides, and we haven't been able to get action here in the U.S. So far, because the companies are getting away with, you know, influencing Congress, and so far have been able to stop action. But I think that here again is something that we will see action on, because we have to. It's a crucial, crucial moment.
Yes, it makes you wonder, what are these companies thinking? Don't they live on the same earth we do? What are they going to eat?
I know. Well, you can always argue that science is too uncertain.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's just
they're not
aspect
believe
of science.
I see.
Science cannot prove to us and tell us beyond a shadow of a doubt that this one thing is causing harm. But yet, with neonicotinoids, the amazing thing is the evidence is so strong. It's piling up. It's becoming overwhelming. New studies all the time. There was just one the other day showing that birds are at great risk from neonicotinoids. Just in the last couple of weeks, scientists from Europe saying that many species are being affected. So, you know, the science continues to pile up. The industry, the chemical industry, continues to dig in its heels. They're making a lot of money on these pesticides. You know, Bayer, just one company, $1 billion in profits, $1 billion, just from one of these neonicotinoid pesticides.
Wow.
So it's huge money. They have a huge incentive to convince us it's everything else but the pesticides that are hurting the bees.
Right. I'm going to interrupt for a moment and say you are listening to KZYX. This is Women's Voices. I'm here with my guest, Stacy Malcolm, and we are talking about pesticide companies that are poisoning our bees and spinning the bee crisis to protect profits. That's this newest article by Michelle Simon, Follow the Honey, 7 Ways Pesticide Companies Are Spinning the Bee Crisis. And it uncovers the deceptive public relations tactics used by Bayer, Syngenta, and Monsanto, using tricks out of the big tobacco playbook.
Yes, straight out of the tobacco playbook, we see a lot of the same themes and strategies. And ironically, neonicotinoids also derive from tobacco, from nicotine. And these companies, it's a lot of the same players, and they use a lot of the same tricks. And Michelle did a deep investigation. Michelle Simon's a public health lawyer, as you said, a long history of investigating the food industry and exposing some of the behind-the-scenes strategies that they use to sell us junk food. And in this case, looked into what's happening with these pesticide company efforts to protect their bee-killing pesticides. And so she named some of these strategies in this report. It's a great report. You can find it on Friends of the Earth website at foe.org. Also, they have a great page with information about bees, which you can find at beeaction.org. So beeaction.org. You can find this report and other recent information from Friends of the Earth about what's happening with bees and neonicotinoids, including how you can help protect bees.
Could you give the website for Friends of the Earth again, please?
That's beeaction.org, beeaction.org.
And Friends of the Earth, is it F-O?
F-O-E, Friends of the Earth, F-O-E.org.
Okay, thank you. So what are some of their tactics?
So one of the big ones, pretending to care, a PR blitz. So as the science is becoming, as I said, just growing and growing, a lot of evidence showing that neonicotinoids can either kill bees outright in cases of high exposure, but more likely, and often the exposures aren't that high to kill them outright, but they can have an effect of confusing bees, interfering with their neurological processes, and they're unable to find their food systems. And they're also making bees weaker to other vulnerabilities like pests or other factors. So a lot of science showing neonicotinoids are a problem, But rather than acknowledging that, what the pesticide companies are doing is coming up with their own PR campaigns to save the bees. So we see Bayer, for example, launched a bee care tour across the country last year, where they held forums and conferences. They actually built a huge center, I think $12 million on a bee care center where they're doing research. And of course, they're getting a lot of good press about this. You know, Bayer cares about bees. But, you know, we've had some folks who've gone to these conferences and taken very good notes and asked good questions. And the message coming across in these conferences is there's lots of factors hurting the bees, particularly mites, a very little discussion, sometimes no discussion about pesticides. So this is really a PR blitz to downplay the role of pesticides in bee harm and highlight other factors. So the Bee Care Tour is really a Bayer Care Tour. Let's protect Bayer's profits by confusing the issue and really pushing a PR narrative that it's other factors besides pesticides that are harming bees. So that's one thing. And, you know, this is, it's not us, it's everything else sort of tactic is we say that it comes from the tobacco industry because they were the ones who famously coined the term, doubt is our product. Doubt is our product. This was a saying that was uncovered in a tobacco industry memo back in the 60s, I think it was, where a PR firm was explaining, if you can raise doubt about the science, then you've won. So raising doubt about tobacco's links to cancer, what you know, was for decades the strategy of the tobacco companies until the science finally caught up with, overwhelmed, and crushed that strategy. But after how many people were harmed and how you know how much policy was delayed, they got away with it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So doubt is their product. They're raising doubt. It's not the pesticides. It's other factors. Let's see, what else? They've got, of course, they put a lot of money into funding industry-friendly science, so creating studies. That was another tactic that's pretty tried and true. From what Big Tobacco did was the Tobacco Institute for the purpose of funding industry-friendly science. And so we see that here, you know, studies coming out of universities or from industry directly that are focused entirely on other factors besides pesticides. So we're not getting a holistic picture. And then the way that science that does come out is interpreted, you know, they're just very good at rushing to frame science in certain ways that benefit their interests.
They don't miss an opportunity, probably.
No, and they're very good at it. You know, my view about science is that we've got to just look at all the evidence that's there and use it as a guidance to make wise decisions. Because it's never going to give us the whole answer. But what we see in the case of neonicotinoids, many studies from many sources showing that exposure to these pesticides is impacting bees in many ways, confusing them, as I said, making them more vulnerable to other factors, at times killing them outright. Lots of science indicating that we need to look at that and say, okay, how can we make choices going forward that protect bees? If we know this is a factor, this is, and we also know this is a factor we can do something about. If these pesticides are contributing to harm to bees, we can reduce them and see if the bees recover. Other things are not so simple to do something about. For example, climate change or the existence of mites, which are a factor. And, of course, you know, one of the of all the things that Bayer was up to, one of the things that really raised my ire the most was their coloring book. Michelle covers this, you know, coming up with targeting children, sort of like Philip Morris did the Joe Camel character, right? We all know Joe Camel and his impact. And what was he really about? He was really about getting kids to have a friendly association with cigarettes.
Yeah.
Well, Bayer has Toby the Bees. And in this coloring book, it has a friendly neighborhood beekeeper who explains to this young man, Toby, that bees are getting sick, but don't worry. It's just a problem with the mites. And actually, Bayer makes a special medicine that will make the bees healthy again.
Mm.
So they're, you know, using it as a way to present Bayer as the champion and chemicals as the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, something else that I've been reading about, that neonics aren't just used in agriculture. Many bee-friendly garden plants sold at home garden centers have been pre-treated with these bee-killing pesticides, which can contaminate their gardens and keep harming bees and other pollinators for months to years.
Yes, that is true, and that's another recent project of Friends of the Earth. They tested a bunch of garden plants that you would buy at Home Depot, Lowe's, and also Walmart. And these are like bee-friendly flowers that you might buy to help attract bees to your garden. Unfortunately, many of them, not all, but we did find about half, 51%, did contain neonicotinoids when we tested them at a lab because they are pre-treating the seeds or the starter plants that are then sold to these retailers that are then sold to people with, of course, no warnings or labels. So you may be buying bee-friendly plants that are actually contributing to bee harm in your garden. And the thing about neonicotinoids, and they are the most, they're the fastest growing class of pesticides and also the most widely used. And they're kind of a new approach to pesticides, but they're systemic, which means that they get throughout the whole plant. They also get into the soil, and they also stay there. So you could have a neonic-treated plant in your garden. Even if the rest of your garden is organic, those plants could also become contaminated, or other plants that you plant there later. So that's one of the key problems with this particular class of pesticides. They're systemic, they're getting into soil, they're staying there. So for gardeners who want to be truly bee-friendly, at this point, the best thing to do is to buy organic plants only for your garden, because that's the only way that you can know for sure that they haven't been pre-treated. Or, you know, ask the folks at the store where you're buying them. Some stores are starting to make commitments, which is wonderful, and which has been a big focus of Friends of the Earth, to pressure Home Depot and Lowe's and other stores to make commitments to get rid of these pesticides. And we have seen progress in that, thanks to all of you out there who have taken action on this, gotten involved, communicated with Home Depot. Thousands of people have been involved in this campaign. And Home Depot did come out and say just a few weeks ago that they're working with their suppliers to get neonicotinoids out of their supply chain, and also that they will be labeling plants by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news.
Yeah, it's good news, and it shows, you know, people really do have the power to make big changes, even with these huge corporations that seem intractable. You know, they are paying attention, and they can change.
But it's really horrifying that this is happening, and that the news that you bring it home unknowingly, and then it spreads to the rest of your garden, of your organic garden.
It can, yes. And it is concerning. And a lot of people have asked, well, what should I do if these plants are already in my garden? And that's a tough one. You know, there was evidence when we did the testing that if plants were watered, you know, plants that were in pots were watered very frequently, that the pesticides were reducing. But, you know, they do go somewhere. One of the sayings that in all this environmental work I've done that sticks with me, we say, you know, we throw things away, but there is no away. There's no away. This planet is one contained ecosystem, and chemicals that get into the environment are getting into all aspects of our lives, getting into our bodies, you know, chemicals that are used on farmland, getting into the waterways. We're all connected. You know, that's the bottom line. We're all connected, mm-hmm. and there is no away. And so we need to start looking at what are we using in the first place, and how do we make decisions from the beginning that consider health and the environment. And that, and in that framework, chemicals are a big problem across the board, because that wasn't the thinking that went into the chemical revolution, you know, that happened in this country after World War II. I wrote about this in my book. It was really, you know, we figured out through research that was government-funded during World War II how to turn oil byproducts into chemicals. And then, you know, there, we had a need for, well, how do we use these technologies? How do we put people to work after the war? And that was really the birth of the chemical industry. And this knowledge that we know how to make plastics now out of oil byproducts, and we can make things colored and dyes and flavors, and we can make things sticky or, you know, hard compared to how, depending on the chemicals we used. And so the thinking in chemistry was how to make, how to create those things, but it wasn't what kind of impact does this have on health and the environment. That just wasn't part of the thinking at all. And decades later, the government tried to regulate, but a lot of that was grandfathered in, and companies haven't even had to test chemicals for health and safety. So now, as science is catching up with that and saying, hey, there's a problem, there are links to health problems in humans, impacts on bees and other species, what are we going to do? And the chemical industry is, of course, entrenched in, well, we're making money, so what we want to do is keep making money,
right,
and not really question this, not really look deeply at the science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
an interesting time to be alive. We have some big challenges ahead of us. How do we counter that?
Well, we certainly do. And it says that, unfortunately, despite this mounting evidence, the EPA has delayed action until 2018.
That's true. The EPA has just been spinning nowhere. But a good thing happened recently, which was the Obama administration came out and said, you know, you've got to step it up. So there's now a White House mandate to come up with a plan on pollinator health. And they have a limited amount of time to do it. So we are going to see some action, but this is also why we're seeing the ramping up of the lobbying efforts of the chemical companies. Just recently, it was announced that Bayer has hired another PR firm, and they also hired former House Majority Leader Dick Gephardt and his chief of staff. For anyone that remembers Dick Gephardt, he was a leader in the Democratic Party. Well, Bayer has hired him to lobby. So they're really, you know, going after the Democrats. They have a lot of the Republicans on their side already. And so this fight is really playing out in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yes, I guess.
and our voices are very important. And the state of California, of course, is very important in what we can do here to regulate the chemical industry and put pressure from a state level.
There's a organization, Pesticides something or other. It's from California. I knew it had initially was concerned about the spraying of pesticides around schools. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Pesticide Action Network?
Yes, yes.
Yes, wonderful organization. They're doing such amazing work. And their website is PANA.org, PANNA.org, Pesticide Action Network North America.
Uh-huh. So they're still there and doing it all.
They are, yeah, and they've done a lot of work in California. As well as other groups, Pesticide Watch is another one. I really encourage folks to check out these groups and to connect with local groups where you can. You know, and there are the local fights like the spraying pesticides in schools, spraying them on hospitals. How can we find different approaches like integrated pest management? You know, so this is happening on every level, and there's a lot we can do in our own yards, in our community spaces, in our state and local governments, and then in our leading up to the big fight, which is the Washington, D.C. Fight and getting our legislation and finding a way to take back our democratic power at that level.
That sounds like a hard one, given this shape of everything.
it's a hard one, and it's one where we've lost a lot of ground. But, you know, now's the time. And I do believe, as I started talking about the women's movement that's growing up around many people questioning what's going on with health, what's in these products that are in my home, what can I do about it? I do think that this is the seeds of where the answer is. Women getting organized. I'm not excluding men, but I think that women are making a lot of the purchasing choices in the home. 85% of consumer products are bought by women. And also, they're the ones that are especially making choices about food. So, and I think they're also the ones that are dealing most closely with illnesses and children who have challenges due to some of the environmental factors we've talked about.
Right.
So women are leading the charge, and I think raising consciousness, and we need to figure out how to get organized politically, not just in a purchasing sense of what we can do with our own purchasing decisions, which is a lot, and that's important. But the next step, how can we get politically organized and really take it on?
How would you see that happening?
I think it has to happen on lots of levels, running for office, supporting each other in running for office, resisting this. The challenge with politics has gotten so negative that a lot of people are just turning off. And I think we can't do that. We absolutely can't afford to say, I don't do politics. Figuring out how to engage in deeper ways and push each other to go further. So, of course, voting, absolutely. Getting educated about voting issues beyond the TV commercials. And then also organizing locally I think it's incredibly important what the state of California has done already on chemicals and what we can do in the future. We almost won that fight to get GMO labeling through the California Senate. So what can we do to push that through next year? Our legislators need to hear from us that these issues are important, that we're not going to back down, and we're not going to take no for an answer. And so I think that is leading up to, we also have to take that message to the Democratic Party. Hmm. And it's not just the Democrats. I mean, we have to take that message to Washington, D.C., but for certain we have to let it be known that environmental health, and I think it's also a bipartisan issue in so many ways. So I don't even know that I want to bring in the Democrats as a target, because Republicans care about and want healthy kids and healthy food and the right to know what's in their food, too. It just hasn't risen to the top as a political issue, and I think it has every chance to once we start talking about it in that way. Yeah. And giving people the handles, you know, and policy options and ways to organize to bring it to the top of the pile. Because I think it's one of the most important things, absolutely, and it should be in the top tier of political issues that get discussed in this country.
Well, absolutely. And when we consider what's happening with the bees, I mean, that should be the top of the top, it seems like. It's vitally important to our survival.
Absolutely. You know, Whole Foods did this wonderful piece online where they showed what a supermarket would look like without bees.
Huh.
And so you can see all the beautiful produce, and then you slide this bar and you can see it disappear.
Huh.
And so, you know, we're talking about like almonds and squash, cucumbers, apples, oranges, cherries, blueberries, avocados, peaches, melons. So all those disappearing, and when you see that image, yeah, you get it. Like, wow, this is really important mm-hmm. to the future of our life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have interviewed in the past Arlene Bloom.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Isn't she? Yes, she is. I thought you might know her and her flame retardant research.
Yes, she is a fierce warrior for truth and a scientist with so much integrity and knowledge. Yeah, she's amazing.
And she's done amazing things on mountains, too.
Yes, she does, which I love. Yeah, she was one of the first women to climb some of the highest peaks.
Yes.
So, and I love that analogy. I mean, I think that's exactly the right, that's exactly what we're facing, challenging ourselves to climb the highest peaks. I mean, when you think about what can we do in Washington, D.C., that's the challenge. We have to figure it out, just like, and put into it what it would take to climb one of the highest mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm speaking with Stacy. Tell me your last name.
Malkin is my last name. Stacy Malkin.
Thank you. With Friends of the Earth. Do you have anything to say? I know this is outside your what you're working on. Chemtrails. Do you have anything to say about chemtrails?
You know, I don't know actually a lot about that. I don't.
Yeah.
I
wonder about it. You know, this is kind of off topic, but a lot of people I know, myself included, have noticed that we are forgetting. I don't mean forgetting in the moment, forgetting words, particularly forgetting words. And I'm hearing it from all different ages, and I've heard it for some time, and I'm experiencing it myself, of course, and I'm wondering what the connection is. It has to be something in it, our environment. It absolutely does.
Well, I think, you know, I'm a believer in really looking holistically at everything. And when we look at the extent to which we're getting bombarded by a lot of foreign substances that didn't exist, you know, when my grandmother was born, chemicals, also probably cell phones and towers having something to do with it. There's a lot of impacts that could be affecting us in some ways neurologically. And will we ever know exactly what or why? But certainly there are a lot of concerning health trends, like you just noticed. I know, for example, that I get reactions to fragrance, and a lot of people do, that can include confusion, as well as respiratory things. People have all different kinds of reactions to, say, getting bombarded with fragrance. But when we look at what's actually in it, you see, well, there are neurotoxins or chemicals that can impact the brain. But that's only what we know, which is such a limited amount. Mm. So when you just take, like, the little bits we know about these lots of different things, it's pretty clear that something's going on that we might never know exactly what, but we have to start reducing risks where we can. You know, getting rid of the things we know are bad, reducing exposures that can be reduced, starting to find new holistic ways to do everything, really. You know, figuring out how to create the stuff we need that it, in a way that's benign, you know, not toxic to health and the environment, which is a branch of science called green chemistry, where scientists are figuring out, you know, how to do that. But how do we support that? Like, how do we get our universities really invested in sustainability solutions
since
versus
mostly,
corporate profit?
yeah, because that's who they're approached by. And that's, I mean, the guys who are running this show have done it very well. All the bases seem to be covered.
It's true, but yet... people are still waking up, getting informed, taking action, making change, and I think that part of it, it really is unstoppable. And we just have to encourage it at every turn, encourage each other, fuel it, and everybody doing their part really matters. There's not one solution, there's not one way to fix this, or one person that's going to do it, or one group. It's all of us doing what we can. And then pushing ourselves further and doing more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually fun. I think there's a lot of joy in this work and in connecting with each other and you taking that next step and seeing somebody else do it and seeing a campaign win, like, you know, Home Depot saying they're trying to get rid of neonicotinoids. You know, we were able through Friends of the Earth last year to get a huge number of supermarkets, 9,000 supermarkets, including most of the big ones, to say they're not going to carry genetically engineered fish.
Uh-huh.
That's huge. I mean, we can win and we are winning in a lot of important ways. So we have to keep going.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
You speak about women coming together. Do you ever think about a women's movement in some way regarding these subjects?
Yeah, I think a women's movement is starting, and I often think about and would love help thinking about how can we bring it together, bring it to the next level, really put a name to it. A lot of people think about a women's movement as being about certain things, you know, feminism or equal pay or reproductive rights. But I think we have so many connections just on the idea of health, health for kids, health for our bodies, a truly holistic view on health, health care, and what it means to be healthy. And if we could come together on those issues and common interests, that would be really powerful and turn it into a political movement. Mm-hmm. I think it's becoming a purchasing movement. I really think that the market is moving in visible, important, powerful ways, and companies are paying attention to that. That's why we see grocery stores saying, we're not going to carry this fish that nobody wants, or we're going to get these toxic chemicals out of our baby shampoo. That is happening, and it's getting a response. Mm-hmm. And my website is along those lines. It's called movethemarket.org. So movethemarket.org, I'm writing about some of these campaigns and these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing, how do we turn it into a political movement? I think that's where we have to go next and really think about how to be deliberate about that and bring these issues to the top of the pile.
There's a video. Well, if anyone wants to look, you gave me just your website. Is there another website that you'd like to? I know the video that I saw recently, and I'm not sure where I saw it.
Yes, you may have seen that on my website, movethemarket.org. Was that the TED Talk
yes,
that you mentioned?
Yes.
Yeah, the TED Talk. It was called Giving the Plastics Industry a Makeover. So that's my 10-minute TED Talk where I talk about a lot of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I have lots of links and resources from my website where you can learn more about GMOs, bees, safe cosmetics, and green chemistry. Those are the themes that I concentrate on in my work.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of good info and connections to other groups that are working on them, and facts and figures. And also you can sign up for my list and keep in touch with me so we can have a continued conversation about this bigger piece. How do we turn this passion into a political movement?
Mm-hmm. And so one would contact you from your website?
Yes, my website at movethemarket.org.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it seems to me that I totally agree that women need to come together, and we have a whole spectrum of subjects because this world is operating certainly not on a feminist or maternal way of doing things, of protecting and nurturing life. I think women from all kinds of organizations, I've spoken with Medea Benjamin, and she too says it needs, I believe, a women's movement is what is required to turn this situation around, to turn this world around, really. Well, there's just no end that we could come together on, and may it be so.
Yes, may it be so, and that's why your program is so important, too, and I love the name of it, Women's Voices. May we raise them up and make them loud and just say what we know needs to happen from our hearts.
Yeah.
May it be so.
In the few remaining minutes, I'm wondering if there's some other favorite topic that you would like to speak in these last few minutes?
Well, I think that it's just so important in the face of all this to try to find a way to not be in despair. You know, one of the pushbacks of the chemical industry is this sort of, they've actually tried to go at the women's movement and the women bloggers in particular with these narratives that, you know, organic moms are just trying to make the rest of us feel ashamed, or you know, environmental groups are trying to worry women. We see a lot of these narratives. And I think, you know, this is not about worry. It's not about fear. It's really about love. It's fiercely love. That's what this movement is about. Like, it's a love of children. It's a love of truth and belief that we can do better, that we have the solutions and that together we can find them. So I guess I just want to think about how we can be in that place, getting out of the worry and the fear and the despair, feeling like it's so hard to, I can't control this, so I want to just not pay attention to it. But instead, just try to take those steps forward and encourage each other and celebrate each other when we do. Taking steps forward, even if they're small, you know, what can you do today to make purchasing choices that really reflect your values? You know, buying organic food, buying from local companies when you can, or start your own, make your own, grow your own, shopping at the farmers markets. You know, really being place-based in our purchasing choices when we can, buying organic plants for the garden, educating our friends about what we learned, sharing resources, speaking out, telling companies when they're doing things that we don't like what they're doing. All of these things are really creating just a chorus of the song of love that I do believe will change the world.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Stacey Malcolm of Friends of the Earth, so much for being my guest on Women's Voices. It's been lovely having you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Good night.
Good night.
Listen. Listen. Listen to the rhythms. Listen for the sounds that resound between the spaces where the beat meets the streets and the heart finds the drumming. The symphony is one tapestry and the sound becomes one rhythm, connecting every moment to this now. Listen to the cries of broken-hearted mothers and frozen-hearted fathers searching for a meeting place. Listen for the lost incantations composed beneath the surface and scripted to return. Listen to the sounds of new souls birthing and babies becoming of them. Listen for the missing ingredients. Finish the recipes just by listening to the source of your soul that is screaming to you to slow down and remember. You are divine. A blueprint of perfect information, a reflection of culminated magic on the precipice of extinction. Resurrect your breath. Listen to the heaving of your own chest breathing, leaving emotion alive in the air to resonate. Listen to the orchestration of every interconnected gesture, creating the canvas upon which we dream ourselves into being. Listen for the lyrics between the lines of the words you think you're hearing and let go. Allow yourselves to feel the flow pulsing within your veins, connecting you with every being on this planet. Your arteries are mirrored reflections of the watersheds of this earth. The ratio of water in your body is an exact replication of the ratio of water to land on this planet. Our tears are the waters of the ocean. Our wombs are filled with this same water. This water forms crystals when spoken to softly. How are you speaking? Communication, celebration, education, healing. Listen to all of these seemingly separate sounds and witness this symphony forms one tapestry. You are a weaver of this fabric that needs the harmony of we to be. You are profoundly blessed. Listen to the silent prophecies they don't want us to hear. If we are the ones we've been waiting for, why wait? We are the ones we've been waiting for. Wait no more. Listen.